Create, detonate, side story, pod together 2016, something really fucking awesome that's also like a pun with Clint and like, I don't know, something about tension and release, something like that, because also it goes back to the bow and arrow, whatever, that's not the important part. The important part is, oh, this is so good and I love it forever, you're amazing. I've been completely awful, I know. We've been having this project for work where basically they're like, everything, all the money that you're going to spend for the entirety of the 2017 fiscal year. Oh yeah, fiscal new year is August 31st, which means all your purchase orders for all of 2017 have to be in by August 1st so we can approve them. So you're going to be doing overtime every day this week for going on all the weeks. It's been so big and so terrible. I haven't recorded anything in 2 weeks. It's been terrible. And then I like completely dropped off the face of the planet. Working in the real world sucks. Anyway, here we go. Here's the potfic. The wife. Jensen asks, a smarmy grin on his face, the moment Clint hangs up the phone. He, like most of S.H.I.E.L.D., thinks that the wife is code for Natasha Romanoff, which is completely fucking ridiculous, and also a fantastic cover for the actual wife. The few agents who pride themselves on their observational skills think the actual wife is Phil. They're idiots, too. And Clint, Phil, and Nat regularly get drunk and laugh at them. Still, this time Jensen isn't that far off the mark, because this time, while it was his actual wife calling, the words coming from her mouth were Nat's. Borscht. Fucking hell, he repeats before punching in Phil's number and leaving the room. Agent Barton, his handler greets within two rings. The warrior was probably sitting on his phone, even though the mission is done and they're just waiting for the ride back to the good old US of A. Clint doesn't bother with formalities. I just got a call, he starts. About that red Corvette I was looking into buying? Oh, did you get it? Phil asks, not even pausing. Yep, but I'll need a couple days to pick her up. Is that all right, boss? I'll send my reports ahead with Jensen and head right out from the airport. Well, you do have more than enough days piled up. I'll file the paperwork for you, Agent Barton. But I expect a ride in your new car. Soon. Clint grins. Waves at Jensen, who's watching through the kitchen window of their safe house. Sure thing, boss. The line goes dead. Across the Atlantic, Phil Coulson sighs. Red Corvette. Damn it. He files Clint's request for leave as already approved, waits for an hour, and then picks a small-scale mission he's had some input on. It's been going badly, and it's not beyond the realm of the possible for him to head out personally to oversee it. He heads out 3 hours later. By the time Clint gets home, the kids are in bed, and Laura is sleepily sitting on the porch swing, a book in hand, tea gone cold by her side. Waiting for him. She takes one look at his face, the desert dirt still clinging to his clothes, and sighs. I was right. It was a warning, wasn't it? He kisses her hello, because she's beautiful and he loves her and hasn't seen her in weeks, and then he nods. Yeah, it is. What does it mean? He drops onto the swing next to her, setting it to, well, swing, rather vigorously for a moment. Wraps his wife in his arms and breathes in her smell. Shampoo, laundry detergent, baby powder, and grass and Laura. It means get the hell out now. Your mission? S.H.I.E.L.D., he corrects. And he can't hide the bitter tinge in his voice, the fear. They made up their code words years ago, slightly drunk, all three of them. And it was Nat who insisted on that particular word, on that message. She was new to S.H.I.E.L.D., new to America, and she didn't trust she wouldn't need to run again. They humored her, Clint and Phil, humored her and made up words for a worst-case scenario they knew would never come to pass. And now, all of a sudden, after weeks of radio silence, there it is. Borscht. Red Corvette. Get the hell out of S.H.I.E.L.D. now. Does Phil know? I considered calling him, but the message said only to call you. Laura bites her lip, worried. Phil was her friend before he was Clint's. I called him right after you called me. Knowing him, he'll bring breakfast. She nods against his shoulder, but doesn't really relax. Despite not being part of this life for years, Laura knows all too well how these games, code words and safe houses, secret escapes and clandestine meetings tend to go. "We'll be fine," he tells her, and she smacks him for being a patronizing ass. Then she rolls to her feet, with a grace even two babies couldn't take from her, and announces, "Bed, shower, not in that order. We can worry when Phil gets here." "Aye, aye, Captain." She laughs. Phil does get there for breakfast. He brings groceries to make waffles and garnishes them with truck-stop toys for the kids, who get syrupy handprints all over his jeans and t-shirt. He doesn't mind, helps Laura clean up afterward, and then puts the idea of a picnic into the kids' minds. They go scampering off to find a perfect spot, their mother following after with a knowing look, and then the two men are alone. "What's going on, Barton?" Phil asks, and Clint sighs, pulls the postcard Laura gave him out of his back pocket. Phil studies it for a long moment, then pads over to the front door to retrieve his duffel and pull out three thick, cream-colored files. "All our active missions. I pulled them before I left. Whatever spooked Agent Romanov must be in here." Clint reaches for the first file, the one with his own name across the top, then stops. Something in Phil's expression. "You already know which one." Flipping open Natasha's folder, he pulls out a stack of photocopies held together with a rubber band. How very 90s of him. Clint only reads the topmost paper before sinking back into the sofa, groaning. "Iron Man? Nat went after fucking Iron Man? Alone?" No. Natasha went after Natasha Stark. Or more accurately, she went after Virginia Potts. She got found out and managed to convince Stark that she turned, making her a double agent. She has been working with Strike Team Delta and Captain America on this. Clint grimaces. He hates Strike. They're all a bunch of steroid-happy baby killers, in his opinion, and he has no idea what Captain America is doing with them. But then he has been with S.H.I.E.L.D. long enough to know that the good captain probably wasn't given much of a choice. God knows Clint adores Fury and is loyal to him, but the man is a giant, controlling asshole. So are we thinking Stark somehow got her claws into S.H.I.E.L.D.? Corrupted it? Or are we misreading the warning? Phil taps one file, leaning back. I don't know. But we have to assume Stark is involved with this somehow. She is the only threat large enough to make Natasha do as she has done. You think she was coerced? Reed. Tortured? Clint doesn't say it, meets Phil's gaze. holds it. After a moment, both men snort. Like that's ever going to happen. Ever. He shakes his head, grabs the postcard again, looks it over. The message is short and to the point, no other codes hidden in it. But upon closer inspection, the address looks weird. Nat's handwriting, when she's not faking it, is spiky, sharp. This is... Clint turns it to one side, to another, upside down. The A's in Laura Barton look almost typewritten, but more fluid than that. Does that look like a 9 to you? He asks, leaning forward again. Phil hums. The O is more 0 than O, he adds after a moment. And the T. A 4? 99940? Barton? Clint shakes his head. The numbers aren't important, he imparts. It's that they're there at all. There is no secure phone in the house. At least, not one S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't know about. So they write a note to Laura and head for the nearest bigger town, almost 70 miles away. Buy a burner, charge it in the car, and head out another 30 miles before making a call to a phone number Clint memorized years ago. It rings 7 times, longer than most people would wait. And then Nat's voice quietly announces, "You have reached the phone of Carolyn Haynes. I'm in Chicago for the week, and I won't be checking my phone. Leave a message only if it's not urgent. Otherwise, call my office directly." Clint hangs up as soon as the beep sounds. "Carolyn Haynes, Chicago," he parrots. "I'll go," Phil volunteers. "I can follow the trail alone and you spend a few more days with your children." "Might be dangerous," Clint hedges, not really willing to let one friend go alone, not after the other had dropped an ominous warning and gone to ground. But Phil seems to feel much the same, because he concedes the point after a moment. "We'll find out what we can from here first." Carolyn Haynes exists. More than one, in fact. Enough to make Clint feel a bit twitchy, which is ridiculous. But then, he's an assassin playing spy games with a Russian with a really fucked up sense of humor, so that's probably A, what Nat wants, and B, to be expected. His life. Seriously. Carolyn Haynes, all of them, is boring. Regular. Not even close to worth mentioning. Except for one Carolyn Emmeline Haynes, who is 93 and lives in an assisted living home, but still keeps a P.O. box all the way across the city. "It might be watched," Clint announces, when Phil declares that he'll drive up to Chicago and empty it ASAP. Phil looks at Clint. Clint looks at Phil. Then he goes, with the expression of a man heading to war, to take over Coop's bath time. As they trade places, he hands his wife his laptop. By the time he has put Coop to bed, changed clothes, cleaned up the bathroom, and dried out the swamp his son made of the hallway carpeting, Laura and Phil are sitting in front of the TV, which is suddenly displaying a whole lot of illegally hacked traffic cameras around a certain post office in Illinois. "You're a queen," Clint praises, pressing a kiss to his wife's hair.
she glares.
I'm retired. Then she vacates her seat and leaves the boys to a riveting night of observing absolutely nothing. By morning, Clint willingly lets Phil go, just so he can stop watching those damn cameras. He doesn't. Of course he doesn't. It takes Phil 4 days to return to the farm, with a sour expression and an armful of papers. Clint, who spent those 4 days chasing after his unruly children, they come after him, and God, does he regret that, fighting with that damn tractor and trying to decide which direction to expand the house in next, is ridiculously glad to see his friend. He'd never tell Laura, as if she doesn't know, but everyday family life terrifies him. She didn't even hesitate when she realized she was pregnant, hung up her gun and her shield and bought this damn farm, knowing full well he couldn't follow. He's not like her. Isn't a good person trying to protect innocence. Before S.H.I.E.L.D., Clint was an assassin for hire, and even now, he's more about blood and violence than he'll ever be about protecting innocence. He tries, and Laura says that's what makes him a good man, but he knows better. And he knows that he could never settle for this. For a life where the only violence happens when the fucking tractor goes on strike again, and the only blood is from knees skinned while playing catch on the gravel drive. He's not made for this. And even though he's ashamed of it, Phil, with those files full of potential death and mayhem, are an actual relief. Laura, as always, forgives him with a kiss to his temple, taking a sleepy Lila from his lap and leaving them to play war. Make war, from the look on Phil's face. What have you got? The look on the older man's face sours even more. Old S.H.I.E.L.D. personnel files. He shakes his head. I'm afraid Natasha wants us to draw our own conclusions. Which isn't all that easy when we don't know what the actual question is. A small nod is his only response. They divvy up the files and settle in for a long night. By morning, the entire kitchen is plastered over with pictures, notes, and badly photocopied old reports. The kids get to have breakfast in front of the TV, because the kitchen table is pretty much buried, never to be found again. And Laura uses her biggest knife to slice strawberries, and gives them until noon to set her kitchen rights. Even Phil gulps at that. Clint always knew his friend was a smart man. But before they undo the paper explosion, they need to understand it. This is a recruitment tree or something. Who recruited who worked with who was related to who? Whom? Phil corrects, even as he traces an old friend, Garrett, backwards up the tree through 6 decades right up to Project Paperclip, the integration of former enemy scientists into the SSR, and later S.H.I.E.L.D. Clint taps the 2 passport pictures closest to his chair, a paper pusher in D.C., and a field agent deployed in India to keep an eye on a certain green menace. What the hell do all these people have in common? At the look that garners him, he rolls his eyes. Paperclip, I get it, but why is that worthy of borscht? He can't see it. S.H.I.E.L.D. is old. Older, if you count its previous incarnation. Almost everyone is tangled all up in someone else now. Spy agencies tend to recruit close to home, so theirs is an unusually high rate of blood relations being recruited. You can probably create a nice little map like this for every early SHIELD facility. Hell, Fury has been director for almost 20 years. His recruitment history probably looks exactly like this. So why is Nat running scared? Phil stares at the mess they made for a long, long moment. Then he taps two words. Enemy scientists. That's code for former Nazis, Clint supplies. It's code for former Hydra, is the correction. Hydra was rooted out by Carter and her people in the 40s. Phil hums. Not yet, he murmurs, tapping the words again. Something survived. Clint turns that over. Once, twice. Nope, still sounds like madness. You can't honestly tell me that you think SHIELD has been piggybacking Hydra for the past 70 years without knowing it. Can't I? I didn't get much out of Agent Sitwell the last time we ran into each other. He thinks I'm trying to undermine him when I ask how my field agents do on his missions. But he did say something interesting. Yeah? Coulson, Clint prompts. He said Stark is buying into old conspiracy theories now. There's a sinking feeling settling into Clint's gut, right next to some excellent pancakes. You think he meant this? I think Natasha isn't the kind of woman to fling around emergency codes without good reason. So we actually think. Lips pressed into a thin line, Phil starts pushing papers together, piling them back onto the table where they started out. I'm afraid so. Funny word choice, that. Clint has never seen Coulson afraid of anything. Before they pack up the files completely, they make a list of all the active agents in those files. Then they compare it with the Iron Man's casualties. Every man and woman Stark killed is on that list. Phil beats on the tractor for the next 3 hours before Clint heads out there with the beer. You don't want to believe it, he opens. God knows he doesn't either. SHIELD has been good to him. Him and his family. He doesn't want it to be rotten to the core. Phil pulls his head out of the engine and glares at the beer Clint put on top of the toolbox for him. I dedicated my life to SHIELD. No, I don't want to believe it. Not without absolute proof. It's not a slight against Nat, Clint knows. They both trust her implicitly, which is why they're even considering this. If the source were anyone else, they would have dismissed it out of hand. But it's Nat. Still, giving up on your life's work, on 20 years of loyal service and everything you believe in, on someone else's word, is just about as hard as you'd expect. Clint, at least, has a family. But Phil? Back at SHIELD, people joke that the man sleeps with his gun on his paperwork. They aren't wrong. So how do we get proof? Phil throws a spanner down, grunts, and grabs the beer. The phone number Carolyn Hayes left with the post office doesn't match the one you had. This is Samantha Collins. Leave a message after the beep. Just for shits and giggles, Clint tells the mailbox, I hate you so much right now. I can't even. Just thought you should know. Don't die. He hangs up. A few hours later, the TV blares news about a ship sinking in the middle of the Pacific. No survivors. 3 hours later, SHIELD releases its own report on the incident. Agent Natasha Romanoff is listed among the dead. Samantha Collins? It's the alias she used on that one mission in Bogota. Are we headed to Bogota then? Because believing Nat is dead doesn't even occur to either of them, even though Clint did get roaring drunk after reading the incident report. With what he knows, the papers Nat left them, the whole thing reads a bit different than it might have before. Iron Man killed everyone on that ship and blew it to high heaven. But Black Widow was playing double agent, and Carolyn Haynes' P.O. Box says it wasn't for SHIELD. If Black Widow and Iron Man are actually working together, then A, Natasha is a traitor, and B, she's definitely not dead. Clint shakes his head and regrets it when the little hangover gnome starts stampeding through his skull again. Nope, Sam was an exchange student. She came from New York. Phil hums. Interesting. I don't suppose she had an address there. It just so happens that she did. And that's where it stops. I would love to see the story of Clint playing scavenger hunt with Natasha, like leaving bits and pieces for him, because he would just get more and more frustrated and just be like, this is the Easter egg hunt that never ends. I don't even celebrate Easter. We're, you know, Episcopalian or whatever is a thing that doesn't celebrate Easter. I guess Episcopalians do celebrate Easter. We're agnostic. And then just being like, going off onto a rant about the commercialization of Easter and why his children don't need more sugar or something like that. And then Phil just being like, yes, I'm competent and wrestling with his demons. And I love the headcanon that Laura Barton was also a SHIELD agent. And that makes a lot more sense than she's a farm wife who just happens to come out of nowhere. No, she was an agent who is undercover as a farm wife so that she can have a life with her children. Or, I guess not quite undercover, but out of covers? Whatever. And I liked the whole inside Clint's head. He's like, yeah, I can't really give up this life for the settled down life. Especially if you pull some of the Carney Clint backstory into that, because wandering and being, you know, he went from the Carney to being in the army to being deployed by SHIELD and literally didn't have a route. He didn't have a home base to operate out of. He went where they put him in. So, like, I like the idea of him almost treating the farm as, like, this is the temporary base, even though it's, like, a long-term thing. Yeah, this is really good, and I'm so excited to see where you go with this. And here's the plot thing. It's, like, 11 o'clock at night here. I have to go to work in, like, 7 hours. Night. Oh, also, let me know if there's any weird fan noises. My mic, I think, might have picked up some, but I'm not 100%. Night!